title of your position here? Are you head of this Department on Radiation Effects?
No. Actually, when I came here, I came to the Department of Occupational Health, which was one of the, it was actually the first department that Dr. Parron started when he was the first dean of the school. Because the Mellons, who gave the money, wanted emphasis on health impact of big industry.
Right.
So it was occupational health. The radiation component, which was my responsibility, got involved to a great extent with the radiology department in the medical school, because that's really where people were getting exposed, not from nuclear industry. And it was kind of awkward increasingly to work through a chairman in occupational health who didn't have much contact with the problems we were dealing with. So we became the first new department in the school, the Department of Radiation Health, in the mid-1960s, and developed physical space, got a grant for construction with the radiology department, so that we had office and lab space across the street, and helped to support their training program as well as our graduate students. We helped to train the residents in radiology. I felt somewhere around 1989. I've been doing that, running that department for about 30 years, and it seemed like time to pass the administrative burdens on to somebody else and get back to research more fully. So I took a sabbatical, worked with my colleagues in Edinburgh on that software development, and the school wasn't satisfied with potential successors and merged radiation health back with occupational health into the current department, which is Department of Environmental and Occupational Health. And so we're back into one department, including a radiation program as well as toxicology and the other areas of occupational medicine and so on. So I'm professor of environmental and occupational health, and no longer have administrative responsibilities, which is one of the happiest developments of the last few years, as far as I'm concerned. I never felt I was a great administrator. I knew what the program should be, I was responsible for developing the faculty and so on. I guess academically, one of the things we pioneered in our department was the first to develop a sequence of courses whereby one-third of our coursework was done in a time slot between 5 and 7 in the afternoon or evening. So that a lot of people working in the field who wanted more education in this area could keep their jobs and still do a graduate program. And we were the first to start using the evening for part-time students at the same time as our full-time students took the courses. So over a three-year period, one could get a master's degree on a part-time basis, where it took 1 or 1.5 years with our 11-month academic year here to get it on a full-time basis. At any rate, the chores of recruiting faculty and the fact that a chairman of an academic department hardly ever sees any faculty member who doesn't have a problem or a complaint. After a few decades of hearing only complaints, I think comes a time when you decide it's enough. It was just the building of the program and the department, I think, was a rewarding experience. So I was telling you about research things that I remember as highlights, but I think really a highlight was developing this academic program and department.
Now, when you say this department, you're talking about the environment and
Well, I developed the radiation Department of Radiation Health. As I say, we're merged back into one department now with all of the other occupational and environmental problem areas, but developing the grad health department, I think, was a highlight.
Does someone else take over the administrative, so you're free?
Yeah, well, the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health has a chairman, and now he has to worry about the budget cuts and so on. I was lucky. I was did all this during the time when federal support was easier to get, and it's a good bit harder now.
Dr. Wald, having covered some of your career, I don't presume to think we've covered, as I said, much of it. I'd like to ask you a few personal questions to move on. Dr. Wald, are you active in the Jewish community? Do you belong to organizations?
Synagogues.
Yes, I belong to Young People's Synagogue. I love
that
name.
Yeah.
It was Young People's when I started, and
right.
When I first got here, and it's still Young People's, and I'm still there.
That's in the Hebrew Institute.
Yeah,
right.
I'm not observant, but I was brought up that way, and the service is still the most familiar to me. Support for the Jewish organizations and federation, all that.
You mean financially?
Yeah, but I really haven't felt that I had the time or energy above and beyond. There's been a lot of traveling, for instance, in my work. You have to go where the problems are, whether it's Harrisburg for TMI or Chernobyl or Japan. And I haven't felt that I could spend a lot of family time over and above what my professional career required.
How about your wife? Has she been?
No, her work either as a special education or her personal commitment to art and writing have taken up her time, so
Dr. Wald, you have referred to being in Germany and feeling rather uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Would you like to expand on that, or would you like to say anything about the Holocaust or World War II, or how you and your family were affected or responded to it?
I remember my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, had her family had immigrated from Hungary and lived in Berlin for some time before she came here from there. And she is an accomplished piano player, but she wouldn't play any German composer's work. When I was old enough to be aware of it and World War II was underway, we were, of course, in the middle of Manhattan. My family was very involved with Jewish organizations. We were aware. I was, I guess, when World War II started, I was in high school, just starting high school. You know, we had an air raid drill on December 8th, then on, you could not be aware of what was going on in the world being there in Manhattan. In fact, I became an air raid warden since I was too young to go into service and felt I ought to be doing something. And of course, in the Jewish community, it was very clear that bad things were going on. We heard from refugees that we were involved, you know, trying to settle, resettle refugees. Since my grandfather was so involved with organizations, and my father as well, I remember the period where a deal was attempted where the U.S. would supply trucks for trade for humans, things like that. Of course, I lived in Yorkville, where before we got involved in the war, we used to see the German-American Bund marching in the streets, brown shirts. So, I guess we were involved and concerned. My childhood. Fortunately, most of my, I guess all of the family I knew about escaped. The closest escape that I knew of was Dad's cousin, my second cousin's a mathematician. His family, or not much of his family, his wife, that Columbia University was instrumental in getting out of Germany just before the war began. And, you know, so we knew from all of these people. I had some Hungarian relatives that came over at about that time also. We were aware of, not to the full extent, but the Holocaust and destruction that was going on.
She just wondered how you felt when you went to Germany.
Oh, yes.
With
that background, I mean, that, I guess, was what I was reflecting. That I had always avoided. I had never, you know, scientific meetings in various parts of the world, and I never found one that I felt impelled to go to when it took place in Germany. Just, I guess, to my contacts with German scientists. Well, it was mixed. In the Air Force, we worked with German scientists that we had brought over. And some of them were obnoxious and some were very normal, pleasant human beings. And, you know, I don't believe in categorizing all of the people of a country by the policies, but it's still not comfortable. I never sought out going to Germany when I was there. Of course, it was purely scientific. There was a World Health Organization meeting, that a small group meeting, not a large society or something, where you have a choice, but, you know, a very specific subject, and I was funded by the Department of Energy to deal with that subject, and this was a necessary part of dealing with it. Well, I think it helped when I saw this big bust of Einstein in the main street of the city where the meeting was, that things had changed. And, the university itself was only about 20 years old. It didn't even exist at the time of World War II. And we did a lot of the people that I encountered, so...
This was in Ulm?
In Ulm, yeah. So it, you know, made it much easier to accept. And there are good things, certainly, in Germany. Their science is supported by the government to a better extent than ours is. The transportation service, the rail service, was outstanding. Someday, I don't think I'll live long enough to see the kind of high-speed train service that they have throughout the country. It would be great if we could get to Harrisburg and Philadelphia with something like that. So, you know, I guess... I'm trying to get around the biases which I was left with from the experience of the World War II period.
Dr. Walsh, you said you're not observant today, although you were brought up in an observant home.
Right.
Do you carry on any of the traditions of Judaism in
your
home today?
Oh, yes. We have Siddurim and Pesach and... Hanukkah candles on Hanukkah. Our children were given Jewish training. Our older son had a bar mitzvah. Our second one very specifically didn't want one, and he was having enough school difficulties, so we didn't push it. But I think they and I are completely Jewish, but not Orthodox. I think you can be one without the other.
Mm-hmm. It's the good thing about Judaism.
Yeah, I think it leaves a place for everyone.
Values.
Yeah.
Dr. Wong, I have to tell you, this has been quite interesting. I almost feel like I don't want to leave. We've been together
well,
so long. I'm sure Shirley joins me in thanking you. Aunt Shirley, unless you have anything else you can think of to ask.
Well, I know I can't live up to the Arab-Israeli Accord that took place this morning, but I hope it's useful. I hope it's what you wanted.
We're all praying.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you are on a very personal level, you certainly have given us everything we could have.
Want to ask if you have any things that we might include in terms of write-ups about you, anything of that kind, that we might picture. And you don't have to give it to us this morning, but we would like to have it to include.
What sort of thing? I mean, I've got the standard biographical sketch of it. You know, I've got the CV that goes on for about 16 pages with all the titles of all the papers I've published. I've got the one-page version. You give me an idea of what you
think
is...
I think if you wouldn't mind, I think the longer version would not be bad. I could have a copy of that.
Okay.
And also a picture.
Oh, I forgot that I was the first physician to serve as president of the Health Physics Society, which is the U.S. Radiation Protection Society.
Is that the gamma?
Yeah, that's what reminded me. A little detail. That's the professional organization for people in the field of radiation protection.
I can't see that far, but I assume that's the...
There's a gavel on a plaque. The other one, the other plaque represents an effort to obtain light to honor their board chairman by providing funds to our program to support students in this field. Turns out when we looked, I think about 19 of the people in the radiation protection program at Duquesne Light were graduates ours.
Isn't that
so? They decided to give the university funding to commemorate when they're chairman, their board stepped down, retired, John Arthur, who had been a trustee at the university also.
Dr. Wong, how many students do you have in
the school? The school has it's gone to about 400 or 500. The department, well, of course, we're in this transition where the two departments merged into one, and then most of the one moved out to the RIDC Park in Blonox. Only occupational medicine remains here in Oakland. Everything else is out there. Most of the faculty is out there. Most of the students have to go back and forth, which has been a little deterrent on the recruitment of students. I don't know what our current number is, perhaps about 50 or so.
Who are in your department?
In the whole department.
In the worst.
Yeah, in the merged department.
What is the 400 to 500 students?
In the school, there are five other departments.
I see. Okay. Maybe just in time to meet the new year, 57-54.
Right. In a brave new world of the Mideast.
Hopefully, a brave new world. It's
scary.
It is scary.
Yeah.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay.